The Harris campaign responding to the event overnight, saying, quote, Trump's entire campaign is in service of people like Elon Musk and himself, self-obsessed rich guys who will sell out the middle class and who cannot run a live stream in the year 2024.
Oh, snap. Kamala Harris's campaign. Good job.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in L.A., also in California in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN, up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, and Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, Seattle's KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets and the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. You may have noticed there in our list of affiliates, that's right, just a quick, if somewhat overdue, howdy and welcome, Desi Doyen, to listeners via our newest terrestrial radio affiliate, WRWK 93.9 FM.
Well, welcome. Yay.
The Work FM in the greater Richmond, Virginia area. Our first, our first Virginia terrestrial affiliate.
Awesome.
That I'm aware of. So we're delighted to have you guys on board every day of the week for the broadcast at The Work FM.
We will have appropriate for today.
Yes, we will have a bit of labor related news coming up in a bit. For the moment, voters in the great states of Connecticut, Vermont, Minnesota, and of course the battleground state of Wisconsin headed to the polls on Tuesday for congressional and state primaries, as well as some important ballot issues. Happily, no reports of note so far of major problems for voters at those polls. We will, as usual, report on any such noteworthy reports of problems and or results of note on our next broadcast. Today, however, we've got a bunch of other stuff to try and get to, including a big problem with poop. Big problem with poop across the great state of Florida. And no, that is not a euphemism for its governor, Ron DeSantis. We're actually talking about actual poop, millions of gallons of it running wild across parts of the state following last week's Hurricane Debbie. Which keeps on giving, I guess.
Yes.
More on that and the poop of Hurricane Debbie with Hurricane Desi Doyen and her Green News report a little bit later this hour. Also, if time allows, aside from the general buffoonery on display at Donald Trump and Elon Musk's tech issue riddled two-hour-long Twitter conversation. I'm sorry, X conversation.
It's Twitter.
On Monday night, and the ickiness of a presidential candidate hanging out with one of the world's richest men on one of the world's largest social media platforms owned by that man, who has also endorsed that presidential candidate. Speaking of being covered in poop, they may also have gotten themselves into some legal trouble in that conversation in the bargain. We'll get to that. And speaking of buffoonery and what used to be known as well, election fraud, at least when it involved Democrats. Independent presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s campaign may have just run into a very big problem, as if it didn't have enough already. But we got to start here today with some actual criminal accountability for some actual election fraud and voting machine tampering related crimes. Yes, it takes time, but yes, there will be accountability for those who tried to steal the 2020 election and or help Donald Trump do so and or help him steal the next one. At least if Democrats, who generally still seem to believe in law and order, unlike Republicans at this point, who make no mistake, absolutely do not believe in law and order, at least as it is supposed to also apply to them. At least if Democrats remain in charge of the justice system, we'll see some accountability. We've been covering this at times hilarious, even if quite serious, story ever since it first broke, almost 3 years ago to the day today, when highly sensitive source code from voting machine software from voting systems in Mesa County, Colorado, as we would learn, was leaked and released onto the internet during a so-called cyber symposium run by 2020 election denier and Trump buddy and now nearly bankrupt betting magnate Mike Lindell of MyPillow fame. The source code in question was leaked out for download on the internet, even as the then Republican Mesa County, Colorado clerk, a woman by the name of Tina Peters, was on stage with Lindell. Now, it turns out it was proprietary software from the voting systems that voters in Mesa had actually entrusted the Republican Tina Peters to protect. It was that software that was leaked out into the wild while she was speaking at this so-called cyber symposium. And it turns out she was the one who helped copy and leak it after sneaking into her own secured voting system software room, which later she leaked to the world as she was making false claims about election fraud at that silly conference. That software that she snuck in and copied is what we all saw that day. We didn't know that's where it was coming from that day, but we learned quickly thereafter. It was after this conference that was, by the way, so silly that it cost Lindell himself millions of dollars after he had released some records of internet traffic mumbo jumbo at this conference, which he said had proved somehow that the 2020 election was stolen from Donald Trump. He released internet traffic. I don't know what else to call it. Some code. It was literally mumbo jumbo. And he offered millions of dollars to anyone who could prove that that mumbo jumbo did not prove that the election was stolen. Well, an actual Trump supporting software guy who was at this symposium ended up doing exactly that. He tried to claim his prize money from Lindell, but Lindell would not give it to him. And this disgraced pillow guy wouldn't pay him, so he had to then sue him. And the software guy took him to court. The court subsequently ordered Lindell to pay up because he lost this contest. And I think Lindell may still be trying to avoid that payment in appeals and or in bankruptcy court, even as he also faces billion-dollar defamation lawsuits from two different voting machine companies. But all of that is separate largely from the story of Mesa County clerk Tina Peters, who Lindell would subsequently try to protect, helping her to hide out around the country as Colorado and federal officials were investigating this heretofore unprecedented breach of sensitive voting system software in her care. The software breach was apparently part of a broader scheme, we would eventually learn, by Republicans, overseen by then Trump attorney Sidney Powell in several different states, including Georgia. It was a scheme to breach voting system software and somehow prove that that software had been tampered with in the 2020 elections to steal the election for Joe Biden, and or perhaps to gain knowledge by Republicans so that they could exploit that software to help them perhaps steal future elections. You may remember, I think 5 people are now facing felony charges in Georgia as part of the broad conspiracy case against Trump in Fulton County, Georgia. 5 people for their part in breaching the voting systems in Coffee County, Georgia. A story which was first reported on this program by our friend Marilyn Marks, the woman who initially discovered that breach. Well, this was related to that. So back in Colorado with Tina Peters, well, there would be many twists and turns in her story along the way and attempts to evade accountability, including this hilarious moment. We played it a few times, but I can't hear it enough, Des. when she was briefly taken into custody at one point, I think it was at a bagel shop or something, by police after she had refused to turn over an iPad that she had allegedly used to unlawfully videotape a court hearing of one of her co-conspirators in all of this. As she obviously felt that, as you can tell in this audio, that, you know, as an upstanding elected Republican and, of course, a well-manicured white woman, she was above having to cooperate with, you know, police seeking evidence in a criminal investigation.
Let go of me! No, let go of me! Let go of me! Oh, no. Let go of me. It hurts. Let go of me! Give me my teeth!
You understand?
Stop it!
Sorry.
No, let go of me! Yes, you are, Caleb. Give me my key to my car. Give me my key to my car. Give me my key to my car. Give it to me. Give me my key. Take my purse.
That was Tina Peters being hauled off by police. Boy, imagine had a black dude spoken to the police that
you
way.
Know,
they would have been shot dead, frankly.
I was thinking exactly the same thing.
So much for back the blue, I guess, when it comes to white Republicans who are being arrested and hauled in. Anyway, that was back in February of 2022. And as the criminal investigation against Tina Peters was ongoing, Colorado's Democratic Secretary of State Jenna Griswold filed a lawsuit to prevent Tina Peters from, overseeing elections in Mesa County, where she was the elections chief. Secretary Griswold was successful in that. She removed Tina Peters from her post, even as Peters decided to then parlay her fame as a Republican scofflaw into a run for Secretary of State in Colorado that year against Griswold. Well, she lost bigly. Tina Peters did. But hey, we got some news on that same Tina Peters today, who was eventually charged with 10 crimes related to her voting system tampering that she said was somehow meant to prove that there was voting system tampering by another country, by China or even Canada, as she suggested.
I guess she thinks you have to breach the system to prove that there are breaches to the system?
That's what she was trying,
break
the case
the law
she was trying to make. And so they broke in, apparently, from Canada into the voting systems in Mesa County to steal the election for Joe Biden, even though during the 2020 election in Mesa County, a very Republican county, Donald Trump won that county by some 28 points that year. Even if Colorado went overall to Joe Biden. Anyway, as AP reports today, former Colorado clerk Tina Peters, the first local election official to be charged with a security breach after the 2020 election, as unfounded conspiracy theories swirled, was found guilty by a jury on most of the charges on Monday. Peters, a one-time hero to election deniers, was accused of using someone else's security badge to give an so-called expert affiliated with MyPillow chief executive Mike Lindell access to the Mesa County election system and for deceiving other officials about that person's identity. Prosecutors said Peters was seeking fame and became, quote, fixated on voting problems after becoming involved with those who had questioned the accuracy of the 2020 presidential election results. The breach that Peters was charged of orchestrating heightened concerns over potential insider threats. And yes, by the way, we remain very concerned about such insider threats, and we've been reporting on it, warning about it for about two decades now, though I am glad that others are finally noticing those concerns. But concerns about insider threats in which rogue election workers who are sympathetic to partisan lies, as AP describes it, could use their access and knowledge to launch an attack from within. Peters was convicted of three counts of attempting to influence a public servant, one count of conspiracy to commit criminal impersonation, first-degree official misconduct, violation of duty, and failing to comply with the Secretary of State. In a post on the social media platform X after the verdict, Peters accused Colorado-based Dominion Voting Systems, which made her county's election system, as well as lawyers for state election officials of stealing votes. So that was after the verdict. She accused Dominion of stealing votes, which I am not sure is a very good idea unless she has evidence of that theft. And you might want to, you know, just ask Fox News how it went for them when they did something similar and eventually settled up by paying Dominion $750 million in the defamation lawsuit that the voting machine company had filed against them. Quote, I will continue to fight until the truth is revealed that was not allowed to be brought during this trial. This is a sad day for our nation and the world, but we will win in the end, she said. Good luck, Tina. Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold, whose office helped launch the investigation into Peters, said she will now face the consequences for compromising her own election equipment, quote, trying to prove Trump's big lie. Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser said the verdict sent a message. Quote, today's verdict is a warning to others that they will face serious consequences if they attempt to illegally tamper with our voting processes or election systems. Well, maybe, but it might take about 3 or 4 years for that to happen. Weiser added, I want to be clear, our elections are safe and fair, he said in a statement. In closing trial arguments, the prosecutor, Janet Drake, argued that the former clerk allowed a man posing as a county employee to take images, copies of the election system's hard drive before and after a software upgrade in May of 2021. Drake said that Peters observed the update so she could become, quote, she could become the, quote, hero and then appear at Lindell's symposium on the 2020 presidential election just a few months later. Drake, a lawyer from the Colorado AG's office, said, quote, the defendant was a fox guarding the hen house. It was her job to protect the election equipment, and she turned on it and used her power for her own advantage. Tina Peters will be sentenced on October 3 this year. She could end up facing years in prison for the various offenses for which she has now been found guilty by a jury of her peers on Monday.
Now remember, this was a multi-state scheme in 2020 to breach voting systems in all of those swing states to use that information to try to contest the 2020 election and to exploit future elections. So I'm glad she is seeing some kind of accountability here.
And to clarify, this was part. She was not charged with that broader conspiracy,
no,
which would be sort of a federal conspiracy. She was charged by state officials, so she can't be pardoned, for example, by Donald Trump should he win this November. But yeah, this appears to be part of a scheme in a bunch of states by Republicans to breach voting system software in Colorado, in Georgia, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, I think in Nevada, if I'm remembering correctly. But so, yeah.
And that software is still out there in the wild.
As we are 2.5 months from Election Day.
Fantastic.
Of course, having been on this beat now for about 20 years, I got to say I am old enough to remember when Republicans used to oppose election fraud crimes. Actually, even that's not true. But they were never actually opposed to them unless, you know, they were election fraud crimes that were carried out by Democrats. They didn't really mind it so much when it was election fraud carried out by Republicans. So one case in point along those lines, I'll remind you of Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney back in 2012. As we covered in great detail at that time, when he was running for president as the Republican Party nominee that year, Mitt Romney actually committed election fraud himself by lying about his residence to remain a voter in a Massachusetts special election just 2 years earlier, back in 2010. At the time, he was the former Massachusetts governor. He's now a Utah U.S. senator. He owned two houses at the time, one that he bought for $3.5 million in April of 2009 in New Hampshire, and one that he bought a year earlier in 2008 for $12.5 million out here in California. Thus, it was kind of strange when we discovered that in order to vote in the special U.S. Senate election in Massachusetts in 2010, where he didn't own a house, after the death of Senator Ted Kennedy, to vote in this special election, well, Mitt Romney registered to vote by claiming that his residence was the unfinished basement of his son's house in the state. This millionaire, who owned two houses in other states, was somehow registered to vote in Massachusetts in the basement of his son's house. Of course, that was the sort of thing that Republicans would have thrown Democrats in jail for trying to do back then. And frankly, they would do it even now if they didn't like that particular Democrat. Back then, of course, since Republicans didn't mind that voter fraud committed by a Republican, by the, in fact, the presidential standard bearer for their party at the time, well, we had a difficult time interesting many others in the many people in the corporate media about that story for some reason, despite the fact that we had it very, very well documented at bradblog.com, and you can go back and read our documentation at the time. But speaking of election fraud, by lying about your legal residence, and coincidentally, speaking of Kennedys here, as luck would have it today, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s independent presidential campaign was dealt a big blow on Monday when a judge ruled that his petition to appear on New York's ballot was invalid, saying that Kennedy had used a, quote, sham address to maintain his New York residency where he hadn't actually lived for years. What? Mitt Romney was able to do it. He didn't have any problems. Why are you picking it on RFK? The ruling, if it stands, and he has 3 days to appeal, he almost certainly will, according to the New York Times today, would keep Kennedy off the ballot in a state where he's lived for much of his adult life, but just not any time recently. And it could endanger his efforts to be placed on the ballot in dozens of other states as well. A group of New York residents, backed by a Democratic-aligned political action committee, challenged Kennedy's New York residency, arguing that his campaign had used a false address on the tens of thousands of nominating petitions that it circulated throughout the state and submitted in order to place him on the ballot. That apparently invalidates all of those petitions because it had a false address on it, an address that didn't actually represent Kennedy's residency. Later on Monday, the campaign said that it would file a lawsuit in federal court in Manhattan in response. The campaign's senior counsel saying, quote, the 12th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution governs the residency of presidential and vice presidential candidates, not state law. If state court judges are going to ignore the Constitution, the federal courts must step in to protect voters' rights. Okay. For his part, Kennedy said the Democrats are showing contempt for democracy. They aren't confident they can win at the ballot box, so they're trying to stop voters from having a choice. He said, we will appeal and we will win. Well, maybe, but I am pretty sure that the Democrats in New York, at least, are probably fairly confident that their candidate will in fact beat both Donald Trump and Bobby Kennedy, who's been polling about 5% nationwide. And that number has been dropping, by the way, since the entrance of Kamala Harris into the race. In the meantime, I suspect you won't hear too many Republicans complaining about all of this, however, because recent polling shows that pretty much everywhere the Kennedy is included in the polling in the presidential race, Donald Trump ends up performing worse against Kamala Harris than he does when Kennedy is not polled, when it's a head-to-head Trump versus Harris. So Republicans may be just fine with this. The decision by Justice Christina Riba, a New York State Supreme Court judge, could open Kennedy up to other challenges in states where Kennedy is also on the ballot because his campaign used the same apparently bogus address to gather signatures in those states as well. As of last week, Kennedy was on the ballot in 19 states, including the crucial battlegrounds of Michigan and North Carolina, and the campaign has submitted petitions or filed third-party status in more than 20 others, including New York. The campaign has won several other ballot challenges in states including Hawaii, New Jersey, and North Carolina. But New York residency, apparently, this is why New York was so important to Kennedy, and apparently why lying about it was so important to him, because his running mate, Nicole Shanahan, she lists California as her home. California, the state where Kennedy appears himself to actually live. As the New York Times notes, under a constitutional quirk, presidential and vice presidential candidates coming from the same state are ineligible to receive the electoral votes from that state. And California has 54 electoral votes. That's the biggest prize in the presidential election, which Kennedy would not be eligible to win, I guess, if both he and his running mate were from California. Kennedy, according to the Times, spends most of his time at a home in Los Angeles that he shares with his wife. That would be actress Cheryl Hines. You know her as Larry David's ex-wife on HBO's Curb Your Enthusiasm. But the petition circulated earlier this year in New York listed an address for him in Katona, which is about 45 miles north of New York City in Westchester County. Lawyers for the voters who were seeking to invalidate Kennedy's ballot access petition say the Katona address belonged to a friend and that he never lived there. And they've got pretty good evidence of that because they had a four-day hearing on all of this. Kennedy's lawyer said he received mail in Katona. He had a driver's, fishing, and falconry licenses from New York, which they say has been his residence continuously since 1964, adding that he, quote, intends to move back to New York as soon as his wife retires from acting. That would be his 58-year-old wife, Cheryl Hines. During the four-day hearing, however, the lawyers for the four voters who brought the suit called Barbara Moss. Now, apparently she owns the house in question in Katona, where Kennedy claims that he rents or stayed in a spare bedroom. And that's how he got his residency in New York.
A spare bedroom be his basis for running for the president of the United States.
The bedroom was referred to in the judge's ruling on Monday when she said, quote, given the size and appearance of the spare bedroom, as shown in the photographs admitted into evidence, the court finds Kennedy's testimony that he may return to that bedroom to reside with his wife, family members, multiple pets, and all of his personal belongings to be highly improbable, if not preposterous, the judge wrote. She concluded that Kennedy had demonstrated a, quote, long-standing pattern of borrowing addresses to keep the appearances of New York residency. She said, quote, using a friend's address for political and voting purposes while barely stepping foot on the premises does not equate to residency under the election law. To hold otherwise would establish a dangerous precedent and open the door to the fraud and political mischief that the election law residency rules were designed to prevent. The Katona home, the judge said, was, quote, merely a sham address that he assumed for the purposes of maintaining his voter registration and furthering his own political aspirations in this state. Now, Moss, whose home is where he, you know, has this spare bedroom that makes him a New York resident, according to him, her home is now in foreclosure proceedings. She testified during this four-day hearing that Kennedy had only recently started paying $500 a month to rent that bedroom, even though they had no written agreement. And she also revealed that she only started receiving those payments in late May of this year. So what, 2 or 3 months ago? Right after the New York Post had written a story questioning Kennedy's residency. But it's worse. David McCallis and Nancy Steiner, a couple who owns a Westchester home that Kennedy had previously listed as his New York address for several years, well, they flatly denied during the trial that their house qualified as his New York residence, as he had claimed. Ms. Steiner, said on the stand that they had been shocked to see themselves represented in news reports as his, quote, landlord.
Oopsie.
In a sworn affidavit, Kennedy called Mr. McCallis, quote, my friend and landlord, and said that his friend had asked him to, quote, move out of the home in 2023, after which Kennedy switched his address to Ms. Moss's house, you know, the spare bedroom.
As one does.
Mr. McCallis called Kennedy's claim a fiction that he was ever his landlord. Ms. Steiner said that Kennedy had been a family friend for decades, but the relationship hit the rocks, quote, when Bobby started chanting certain conspiracy theories. Attorneys representing the New York voters grilled Kennedy in often heated exchange during this hearing as they sought to make their case, pointing to government documents, including a federal statement of candidacy with a California address on it from Kennedy. Anyway, like I said, I will be surprised to see many Fox News Republicans, even though they had long, by the way, pushed to get Kennedy to run. I don't know that many of them will be complaining at this point about the fact that he may now be tossed off the ballot in New York and a number of other states along with it. Since the Republicans, their years-long push to get him onto the ballot, remember Trump's former top White House advisor, Steve Bannon, who is now in prison, was among Kennedy's biggest champions to get him to run because they hoped that it would hurt Joe Biden at the time. Well, all of that seems to be backfiring now, with Kennedy appearing to take more votes from Donald Trump than from Kamala Harris after these, you know, years of Republicans promoting this guy. So I would be surprised if many Republicans at this point actually come to the defense of Bobby Kennedy to keep him on the ballot. Had Kamala Harris, of course, done anything like any of this, of course, they would be screaming bloody election fraud from the highest heavens. But when it's, you know, one of their own, whether it's Mitt Romney in 2012 or whether it's Bobby Kennedy in 2024, well, I think they're all going to just stay pretty quiet about it. Let's take a quick break here. And since it's impossible to keep either Donald Trump or Elon Musk quiet about just about anything these days, we'll come back with a few details from the two-hour chat on Twitter on Monday. Well, actually, the details that might have landed both of them in legal hot water. Oops, that, and Desi Doyen's poop-covered green news report is still ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial. Hey, this is Brad. Here at the Bradcast and bradblog.com, we fight for election integrity all year around, like no other media outlet in the nation. But of course, we need your help to help us remain on your public airwaves and completely independent. Please help us continue that fight over your public airwaves by stopping by bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
There's power in a factory, power in the land, power in the hand of the worker. But it all amounts to nothing if together we don't stand.
Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. United Auto Workers Union leader Sean Fain really does not seem to like Donald Trump, as far as I can tell. He really has not fallen for Trump's the years-long lie that Trump is a friend of the forgotten working man. Apparently, Sean Fain ain't buying that. In truth, Trump is the opposite of that and the opposite of a friend to actual labor, certainly to actual union members, and even the idea of collective bargaining at all. In fact, the UAW Sean Fain thinks Donald Trump is a scab who doesn't know anything about the working class, as Fain made clear during remarks last week at a Kamala Harris-Tim Walz rally in a hangar at the Detroit Municipal Airport in Michigan. You know, that was the rally where some 15,000 people didn't actually show up at all to greet the Democratic ticket, but they were simply added somehow to this hangar by artificial intelligence. As the artificially intelligent Donald Trump has actually been claiming this week. Anyway, here's what those fake, non-existent 15,000 people actually sounded like during some of Sean Fain's remarks at that rally last Tuesday.
Donald Trump is a scab! And his sidekick isn't any better. J.D. Vance is a vulture. That's right. You know, every time Donald Trump gets a chance, he trashes our union and he trashes the working class. He comes to Michigan. He talks about he's going to bring back the auto industry. Let me tell you something. Donald Trump doesn't know shit about the auto industry. And he doesn't give a damn about the working class in this country.
Very, very realistic sounding AI for those crowds. Sean Fain is apparently no fan of Donald Trump. Which brings us to this story today. Now, Desi, we had a few technical hiccups at the end of yesterday's broadcast.
Yes, we did.
When we, well, actually you, but who's counting, accidentally hung up on a caller who had to call us back. And then there was an errant sound clip that got played, even though that one was not your fault.
No, that was not.
But you know, glitches and hiccups like that do happen. And they're no big deal, especially on an independent radio show run by a hamster running around on a wheel and a couple of exhausted yutzes like Desi and me who are trying to run along with that hamster.
On a nonprofit radio station that is also trying to keep it together.
But those mishaps yesterday on this show, apparently, well, they were nothing compared to what happened when one of the world's wealthiest men and union opponents met up with his new buddy, the disgraced former president and convicted felon, and yes, union opponent, Donald Trump, on Elon Musk's once great but now crappy since he bought it, allowing all the wingnuts and Nazis to return to its social media site that we still describe as Twitter. It's been rebranded as X, and the X stands for extremely crappy, so we just call it Twitter. Anyway, as the Times noted in their report on what they described as Musk and Trump's, quote, two-hour ramble together, supposedly an interview on Monday night on the service on Twitter, the 8 p.m. Eastern Time so-called interview got started 35 minutes late, and even then it crashed no sooner than it had begun for yet another 7 minutes. So see, Des, don't feel bad. Happens to all of them.
It's what happens when you fire your engineers.
Apparently, for all of his billions of dollars spent to buy the failing social media site, I think he spent, $44 billion? He couldn't get it to work for the first 45 minutes or so, as Musk blamed a, quote, massive distributed denial of service attack, a type of cyber attack that floods, web traffic, websites, floods it with malicious traffic to overwhelm the site and to knock them offline. Musk said at one point, as this massive attack illustrates, there's a lot of opposition to people just hearing what President Trump has to say. Okay, Elon. Later, Trump, because, you know, you never get to hear what Trump has to say. Later, Trump blamed China for whatever happened, despite any evidence for that either. The Verge reported there is reason to be skeptical that there was any attack at all, instead of a simple inability for Musk's platform to be able to handle a live audio streamed conversation with many listeners. As they reported, as The Verge reported, amid the snafus, they said, quote, the rest of X appears to be working normally. And a source at the company confirmed to The Verge that there wasn't actually a denial of service attack. Another X staffer told the outlet that there was a, quote, 99% chance that Elon was lying about an attack. Anyway, they rambled, apparently, for 2 hours thereafter. And I won't bore you with many details because, frankly, I was unwilling to bore myself with the details of listening to it for 2 hours. And actually, some of it was while we were still working on yesterday's show and so forth. But apparently, the UAW's president, Sean Fain, listened to it. At least he listened to this part of that conversation.
I mean, I look at what you do. You walk in and you just say, you want to quit? They go on strike. I won't mention the name of the company, but they go on strike and you say, that's okay. You're all gone. You're all gone. So every one of you is gone and you are the greatest. You would be very good.
Okay. Now, you probably didn't understand much of what they were rambling there and laughing at each other about. But that little exchange between the two of them may have actually been a violation of the National Labor Relations Act by Donald Trump and or by Elon Musk, as Axios is reporting today. The United Auto Workers Union said on Tuesday that it has now filed federal labor charges against former President Trump and Tesla CEO Elon Musk after the duo's conversation on X veered into talking about workers striking. The UAW recently endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris's 2024 bid, while the union is also attempting to organize Tesla workers, despite Tesla CEO Elon Musk being virulently anti-union, as he has been for years at like all of his plants. He hates union. He hates labor. He's not unlike Donald Trump that way. The UAW said it filed the charges against Trump and Musk, quote, for their illegal attempts to threaten and intimidate workers who stand up for themselves by engaging in protected, concerted activity such as strikes. And in fact, they flagged that particular comment by Trump, saying, you walk in, you say, you want to quit? They go on strike. I won't mention the name of the company. What name of the company is he talking about? Probably Tesla. I won't mention the name of the company, but they go on strike and you say that's okay. You're all gone. So every one of you is gone. Ha, ha, ha. And they laugh and it's hilarious. And Elon is heard laughing, despite the fact that it is illegal to threaten to fire workers for going on strike. You can't threaten them. You can't make them think, oh, ha, 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 we might fire you if you consider going on strike, if you consider forming a union. And it's certainly illegal to fire them if they actually do go on strike and then you fire them for that, which is something that Donald Trump thinks is hilarious and would love to do. He's a big fan of what Ronald Reagan did back in 1980 when he came in and he fired the air traffic controllers who had gone on strike. Donald Trump thought that was great. Fantastic. Fire those workers. Where do they get off thinking they deserve proper pay and proper rest periods in order to control the nation's air traffic? Fire them. Hilarious. As you heard, Musk there, who has endorsed Donald Trump, he laughed at the Republican presidential nominee's comments, but he did not directly address his remarks, which was probably really smart of Donald Trump. Of Elon Musk. Both Trump and Musk want working class people to sit down and shut up, said Sean Fain, a UAW president, in a statement. And they laugh about it openly. He said it's disgusting, it's illegal, and it's totally predictable from these two clowns. Musk did not respond to a request for comment on Tuesday to Axios, which might be the second smart thing that Elon has done over the past 24 hours by not responding. The Trump campaign senior advisor Brian Hughes called it a, quote, frivolous lawsuit and, quote, a shameless political stunt intended to erode President Trump's overwhelming support among America's workers.
I don't think that there's actual evidence to back up that claim.
About
overwhelming
support among America's workers.
Because I will point out that Fain at that Detroit rally, he pointed out the very sharp contrasts between Harris and Trump as the nominees. I mean, he noted that Harris walked the picket lines with the UAW when they were striking. Mm-hmm. Biden also walked the picket lines, the first president to do so.
Yeah.
Biden also helped rescue auto plants that were closing or in danger of closing or had already closed by giving them funding from the Inflation Reduction Act to transition and convert to electric vehicle factories. And Trump, he pointed out, did not do any of those things. And in fact, stiffs workers all the time, stiffs his contractors all the time.
Well, that's just because you're ignoring President Trump's overwhelming support among America's workers. When labor charges are filed under the National Labor Relations Act, as the UAW did on Tuesday, the National Labor Relations Board decides whether to investigate the allegations. If it includes there were violations, it could then impose penalties. Now, when Donald Trump was in office, he stacked the NLRB with a bunch of, loyalists and lackeys who always agreed with the corporations instead of with the workers. That has now changed under Joe Biden. But the fact is, the penalties for violating the National Labor Relations Act are notoriously pathetic. As we have long reported on this program, making it, totally worth it for billionaire company owners and CEOs like Musk and Donald Trump to violate those laws because the penalties are so cheap. It's worth it. They make more money breaking the law. And hopefully, by the way, that's another thing that Democrats and longtime union and labor supporters, Kamala Harris and her longtime union member, running mate, Tim Walz, he was a union member himself during his 20 years as a high school teacher. Hopefully that is something else. That's another thing that Harris and Walz can finally do something about if they are elected this November with a House and Senate that will play along with them. Trump has already made it quite clear that he would do the exact opposite as a longtime opponent of organized labor. And if you don't believe me, just go out and read Project 2025 and see what they plan to do the next time a Republican gets into the White House.
Like get rid of overtime pay.
Yep. Anyway, speaking of Project 2025 and things that Trump will do if elected again, let's take a quick break and come back with the Green News Report. That is next on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
The broadcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Apparently, I didn't listen to it, Des. You might have listened to that conversation between Trump and Musk. The New York Times reported that Trump appeared to have a lisp or something at the beginning of the conversation.
The parts that I heard,
did you hear it?
I did not listen to all of it, thank God, but it did sound like something was weird with the way he was talking. Like he was talking kind of like this, like maybe his dentures were slipping or something, but I don't know if he wears dentures, so I don't know.
Like when he said United States.
Yes, like that.
Yeah. Okay. Gosh, I hope he's all right. Anyway, let's get to it. Our poopy-covered green news report.
Millions of gallons of raw and partially treated sewage have been released during the storm.
Well, that's a nice start.
Hurricane Debbie's parting gift, raw sewage spills. July 2024 was the hottest July ever recorded globally. Plus,
if he is elected, Donald Trump intends to surrender our fight against the climate crisis.
Republicans Project 2025 calls for deleting all references to climate change from the federal government.
All of those insane calls and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Arizona, you know this crisis is real. He calls it a hoax.
Yeah, but that's because he's insane. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, speaking of insane, another heat record in July, eh?
Yes, it was indeed. July 2024 was the hottest July ever recorded globally, barely beating July 2023 as the hottest July. And since record-keeping began in the mid-1800s, it is the 14th month in a row to set a new all-time heat record for that month, according to NASA.
I'm no climatologist, but I think I'm starting to see a pattern.
But Europe's climate service, Copernicus, using a different data set, found July 2024 was very slightly cooler than last year's record July.
It's getting cooler. Global warming is over.
Well, both organizations say 2024 is likely to surpass 2023 as the hottest year ever globally.
Oh.
All that fossil fuel-driven record heat has consequences. In Greece, massive wind-driven wildfires are again raging around Athens after several record heat waves and extreme dryness. The front line of the fires is 24 miles long, and the fires have forced the evacuations of at least 11 towns, including hospitals and schools. More fire weather is in the forecast. Greece has appealed to the European Union for help in fighting the fires. In Brazil, a new study finds that climate change fueled the record early start this year to wildfires in Brazil's Pantanal, the world's largest wetlands. The researchers say that man-made global warming, driven by the burning of fossil fuels, quote, supercharged the Pantanal fires, making them 40% more intense than normal. And they calculate that the massive fires this year have likely killed millions of animals. In a different study, scientists at the World Weather Attribution Network found that climate change exacerbated fire conditions in the Pantanal, making the fires 4 to 5 times more likely to occur. In Florida and North Carolina, Hurricane Debbie is gone, but she left a parting gift of nasty impacts from extreme rains and floods. Debbie's deluge swamped Tampa Bay's sewage treatment plants, causing millions of gallons of raw sewage and partially treated wastewater to overflow into streets, canals, and streams.
Well, we really deserve it, don't we?
In North Carolina, the storm flooded open-pit lagoons, storing millions of gallons of livestock manure, sweeping the contents into nearby streams. The sewage spills underscore the necessity to strengthen outdated wastewater infrastructure in thousands of U.S. cities and towns as extreme rainfall events increase in the U.S. due to climate change. But the right-wing groups behind the Republicans' massive Project 2025 agenda say climate change is not happening and they won't be doing anything about it.
Oh, good. Well, let's listen to them. That sounds much, much nicer.
ProPublica obtained training videos for Project 2025. That's the detailed 900-page blueprint for overhauling the federal government. It's for Donald Trump or whenever the next Republican gains control of the White House. One section calls for firing some 50 60,000 public service employees and replacing them with loyalists. The videos coach those future Republican appointees on how they can undermine federal agencies and use the federal government to promote right-wing policies and consolidate executive power. It calls for reversing and gutting U.S. climate policies and laws. In one video, climate science denier Bethany Cosma, a right-wing activist and former Trump administration official, sneers at the gravity of climate change and efforts to combat it as, quote, a ploy to control people, even as climate impacts are costing Americans lives and billions of dollars in damages every year.
Climate change, allegedly, is everywhere. And if the American people elect a conservative president, his administration will have to eradicate climate change references from absolutely everywhere.
Cosma also even attacks the U.S. military and its threat assessment that climate change is the number one threat to U.S. security.
So if you just eradicate any references to climate change will go away.
Exactly.
The plan is sound. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Yeah, and we should note in down in Florida, where, you know, there's poop everywhere following Hurricane Debbie and floods out of nowhere in the middle of the day just because, well, Florida is sinking as the oceans rise. Hasn't the governor there already done something like that when
yeah.
it comes to climate change?
And yes, Florida is already hard at work. Florida's Republicans, I should point out, are hard at work trying to eradicate the idea of climate change from state law and policies. Because, you know, if you just ignore it and you yeah. don't talk about it, it yeah. doesn't exist.
Yeah. And what's so weird about it is they're already removing climate change from, you know, well, the government in Florida. And yet climate change still seems to keep attacking them down there.
That is so climate change.
That is so climate change. Thank you very much, Desi Doyen. And thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program or any other that we have ever done since the beginning of time, you can download them for free at bradblog.com, where there is no paywall, very, very few advertisements, and we will never bother you with spam. If you just sign up, hit one of those donate buttons and sign up for a monthly subscription of any amount you like. It's all free, but you're allowing everyone else to get it for free as well, keeping it free and paywall free as long as we can so we can stay on your public airwaves. Bradblog.com/donate will get you there directly. We thank you in advance for your support. Drop me an email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. Always good to hear from you. And on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and site, yes, still known as Twitter, I am The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.